Great question. The Manufacturing Podcast offers news and information for the people who make, store, and move things, and those who manage and maintain the facilities where that work gets done.
Welcome to the latest episode of Talking EHS, part of the Great Question podcast series produced by Endeavor Business Media's Manufacturing Group. Here's where you'll get updates and conversations concerning the latest news and developments in workplace safety. I'm Dave Blanchard, Editor-in-Chief of EHS Today. Joining me today in this podcast are Adrian Selko, Senior Editor, and Nicole Stempak, Managing Editor. So welcome. I'll kick things off here. Recently, I was able to attend the Ohio Safety Congress in Columbus, Ohio, an annual trade show and conference hosted by the Ohio Bureau of Workers' Compensation. You might wonder, well, how many people would come to an event like that? As it turns out, a lot of people came. There were roughly 8,500 attendees, which I think puts it at the same size or maybe even bigger than the national ASSP or NSC events. They had a trade show at the Ohio Safety Congress, and that ran for a day and a half, and the conferences themselves ran for the full 3 days. Now, it wasn't strictly a safety show just for safety professionals. As far as I could tell, there were a lot of HR people, nurses, case managers, attorneys, rehabilitation counselors, and disability specialists. I was able to find a number of sessions that aimed mostly at safety or HR people. So I'm going to just talk about one of them that I thought was fascinating. This presentation was called Workplace Stress: Is Resiliency Failing Us? This presentation was presented by Shelley Meadows and Martin Franke from Navigation Consulting and Training. And they started out their presentation with some startling numbers. And I say startling because if you'd never heard them before, they were pretty alarming. Now, we've shared some of these numbers in the past with EHS Today's readers, but let me share them with our podcast listeners today. Mental health injuries, turns out, are the most common injury sustained at work, accounting for more than half, 52% of all workplace injuries. 1 million U.S. workers are absent from work every day on the average due to stress. And 1 out of 4 employees at any given time are experiencing burnout symptoms. So a common question that companies ask, especially senior management, what's the financial risk of employee stress and burnout? They're not necessarily being dismissive of the idea, but many companies just don't know how much workplace stress is costing them financially. So the consultants, Shelley and Martin, cited a study that reveals that mental health injuries have a longer recovery time, 15 times greater time lost compared to other injury types. And they also have a much higher direct cost. Mental stress claims are 8 times higher than other injury types. Stress and burnout aren't the problem, they pointed out. They're the symptoms of systemic organizational imbalances. As the presenter said, companies need to get better at addressing those systemic issues and not just assume that an individual will get better after a little rest. As they said, we're all in the same storm, but we're not all in the same boat. Decades of research, according to the presenters, indicate that merely trying to help an individual cope with a work situation is far less likely to have a sustainable impact on employee health than systemic solutions, including organization-level interventions. So what contributes to burnout? Well, things like insufficient staffing, a heavy workload, poor or toxic leadership, too much time spent on busy work or administrative tasks. So a typical response from a manager might be to give a worker an extra day off. Problem is, that might do absolutely nothing to change the work situation. And in fact, it could exacerbate it by creating a situation where that person is now 1 more day behind on his or her work. More helpful systemic response would be to address the workload or offer more resources and examine the management structure that might be causing the problem. A toxic workplace behavior is the biggest driver of negative workplace outcomes, such as burnout or an intent to leave the company. Unfortunately, there's a 22% gap in perception of mental health and well-being in organizations between employers and employees. 22%. So the boss might think, well, everything is just fine, whereas the employees are stressed out and ready to find another job. The presenter's main suggestion to safety leaders, as well as all kinds of managers, be a partner in stress prevention. Be proactive in addressing the root causes of workplace stress and burnout to prevent psychological and physical injury. Now, there are plenty of resources out there, so stay up to date and stay informed about mental health awareness. And that was just one of many good sessions at the Ohio Safety Congress. So let me now pass it over to Adrian.
Thanks, Dave. I'm going to talk about industrial robots and their ability to reduce injuries. This came about when last month I was watching a video of a humanoid robot called Apollo that was working in a Mercedes-Benz plant and was lifting and carrying heavy boxes, putting things on shelves, and performing a number of tasks that are less than ideal for people to perform. My first thought was, this should really be able to move the needle on unnecessary injuries in a warehouse or distribution center. So I looked around to see what information was out there, and it turns out the National Safety Council also sees potential for improvement with robots working alongside of humans. They highlighted this issue in their 2023 report called Work to Zero. They looked at the whole gamut of robots, including autonomous mobile robots, automated guided vehicles, articulated robots, humanoid robots, and collaborative robots. They found that these are the areas that they can improve working conditions. One is confined entry inspections, handling hazardous material, reducing the risk of human exposure to toxic gases, high temperatures, electric shock hazards, and also falls from height. They also noted that cobots and robotic arms are well established for repetitive manual tasks such as machine tending, parts repositioning, and pick and place. Such deployments can reduce the risk of musculoskeletal disorders from repetitive manual work and allow workers to focus on more varied, complex tasks. The CDC also highlights this and talks about a number of ways that this can help specific dangers and gave a couple examples, such as robots can inspect offshore oil rigs while people remain safely on shore, and a fleet of self-driving vehicles could reduce motor vehicle crashes among delivery workers. In a study from 2002 called Industrial Robots, Worker Safety and Health, data was used from OSHA covering the periods 2005 to 2011, and they reported a 1 standard deviation increase in robots reduced the work-related injury rate by 1.2 injuries per 100 full-time workers. This is good news. There, of course, is another side to that, and that is that sometimes robots can add safety hazards. Probably many of you are familiar with the recent case of a robot in South Korea crushing a worker to death in a vegetable packing plant in November of 2023. Unfortunately, that is not the only fatality. A 2022 report from the CDC found that 41 U.S. workers were killed in robot-related workplace incidents over a 15-year period. The vast majority of these deaths took place while a person was performing maintenance on a robot. And the Brookings Institute weighed in as well. Research from 2023 pointed out that some robots lack the necessary sensory capabilities to detect humans. And of course, this creates safety risks. The group refers to an estimate by the Center for Investigating Reporting based on 150 warehouses analyzed over a 4-year period and suggested that warehouses with robots experienced 50% more injuries. On the other side of that study, Brookings said that this analysis might not be completely correct, as probably some of the facilities that were chosen to bring robots in had higher injury rates to begin with. But there are a number of organizations that are trying to help companies address this issue. The Center for Occupational Robotics Research, which is part of NIOSH, issued a report in 2017 called Protocol for Assessing Human-Robot Interaction Safety Risks. They also disseminated an OSHA technical manual on robots and robot system safety. An industry group called A3, which was formerly the Robotics Industry Association, has been involved in safety standards for robots as well and introduced a new standard. They also offer training for mobile and collaborative robots. But even with these potentials, the National Safety Council seems to be very optimistic. And in their report, they said, and I quote, "Pre-built, easy-to-use robotics, hardware, and software packages are being continuously developed for additional common safety-related use cases, meaning the real ROI concerning safety will be seen in the near future for both large and small industrial organizations." My take is that more research still needs to be done to assess both the benefits and the dangers of working alongside robots. And with that, I'll pass it to you, Nicole.
Thank you, Adrienne. Hello all. I'd like to talk about the chain of events that lead to an accident and its aftermath. So we often like to examine a single issue and try to solve it in isolation. But they're usually a symptom of a larger problem. So one of my favorite examples to illustrate this point is to think about how optometrists are sometimes able to detect chronic health concerns like diabetes before a patient might experience any symptoms. And it sounds wild, but that's because our systems, like our body organs and internal systems, are a lot more interconnected than we often think. And addressing them requires a holistic approach. And that's true for other aspects of daily life, too. So I want to share some of the implications of the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse in Baltimore. So it's really easy to hear the news and dismiss it as not being immediately relevant or applicable for an individual in a different industry or in a different environment. But there's always lessons to be learned. But sometimes it takes a little work or requires stepping back to see those lessons. And most certainly coming up with better solutions requires all stakeholders to come together to the table and to work together to take both a deep dive and a broader look at the issue. So just a quick recap of the events that happened shortly after midnight on March 26th. So the container ship, the Dali, suffered a complete blackout and began drifting out of its shipping channel. A backup generator restored electricity to the ship, but not the propulsion system. The crew made a mayday call to the Department of Transportation in Maryland that they lost control of the ship. And shortly thereafter, the Dali struck the Francis Scott Key Bridge pier, one of the piers. And, you know, as you can see in those videos, in just seconds, you know, the third longest bridge in the world collapsed. So emergency responders who heard the call took immediate action that saved lives. But unfortunately, those warnings didn't reach the construction workers doing road repairs on the bridge. You know, that raises questions about how workers on a large job site can quickly communicate with one another. You know, are workers being equipped with handheld devices so that they can radio or message colleagues and supervisors while they're working in these dangerous work environments? You know, we don't know if they've been able to hear a mayday call from emergency responders. You know, could communications have been quickly and easily broadcast in multiple languages? Had workers practiced emergency evacuation drills and been able to take immediate action? We don't know, but these are all opportunities that you will likely see on your work site that you can use to take preventive actions in the future. There's just no number of opportunities that we can look at. And we know that safety doesn't happen by accident. You have to actively build safety into the equation. You have to follow protocols. And we're seeing that too in the cleanup and the aftermath of this terrible accident. You know, the Dali's 4,700 shipping containers, some of them were plunged into the water and they need to be moved. The 1.6 mile long bridge itself needs to be removed. And this cleanup requires plenty of specialized equipment and skilled workers, including divers who will have to plug in the containers' ship's holes using special oxygen-fueled underwater arc torches. this process will take years. Engineers will need to design a structure with barricades that can help provide additional protections to reduce the likelihood of this happening in the future. You know, they'll have to take into account other future potential safety concerns like rising sea levels due to climate change and the increasing size and weight of cargo ships. We are so fortunate to have so many ways to get from point A to point B in America. You know, most days we're so preoccupied about getting from point A to point B as fast as possible that it's easy to take our roads, bridges, overpasses, railways, et cetera, for granted. You know, but we need to acknowledge that our transit infrastructure is a modern marvel and it does need to be maintained. And that includes periodic repairs and updates. And that's true for other aspects of our infrastructure too, like manufacturing. We need to make sure that we are taking care of what we have and making improvements to it so that it'll continue to last. And it's really easy to push things aside, to go with the status quo, to accept things the way that they are, even to fall into the dangers of complacency. But you know, as safety professionals, you know what can happen. And so now is the time to be vigilant. And I just hope that some of the things I've mentioned today can help you see safety in a new light and perhaps offer some new ways to engage with workers about safety, even if you don't work in the maritime industry, even if you don't work in Baltimore, because you know, as I alluded to in the beginning, we're all interconnected and we all can take lessons learned from one another and we can all contribute to the improvement of any problem that we may have. So now back to you, Dave.
Thank you so much, Nicole. Well said. We really are all interconnected. And this podcast itself, the Great Question Podcast, is a series of podcasts that include EHS Today and several other important brands from Endeavor's manufacturing group. But that will wrap it up for this installment of Talking EHS. If you like what you heard, we encourage you to subscribe to The Great Question wherever you get your podcasts. And definitely check out our website, ehstoday.com, for all the latest news and developments in workplace safety. So for Nicole Stempak and Adrian Selko, I'm Dave Blanchard. See you next time.